As we reported earlier, thousands of demonstrators gathered on the National Mall today, marking the 10th anniversary of the Million Man March. At that event, a decade ago, African American men pledged greater responsibility to themselves and their families. This year, organizers have set out an ambitious 10-point program, and they say they're creating a movement, not a one-day event. To assess the effectiveness of these kinds of marches, we've called Ronald Walters, professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland, and Shelby Steele, a senior research fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. Welcome to the program, gentlemen.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Let's start with the first tenet of the Millions More movement, unity. It reads, "We call first for the unity amongst black peoples and organizations. We call for unity amongst all African peoples and peoples of African descent worldwide." Dr. Walters, you're a speaker at the rally. Why is unity the first point on its listed issues?
Well, power really comes from unity. And that's certainly necessary if you're trying to develop political movements. You're trying to sort of state your case to the American people or to the world. And certainly it's necessary for every group that I know anything about at all that tries to influence public policy and to say what their condition is.
Dr. Steele, do African Americans need to come together?
No, my feeling is that we probably have too much unity, that we could do with a little healthy disunity. 90% of black Americans vote for whatever Democrat runs for the presidency every 4 years, and so our vote, it actually causes us, therefore, to lose power because our vote is taken for granted by both parties. Other minority communities where Asian, Hispanic, where there is more division, those communities tend to be sought after and curried more by power than ours does.
Dr. Steele, the Millions More movement calls itself the, quote, voice of the poor and disenfranchised. How should the poor and disenfranchised make their voices heard?
Well, you know, this involves a long analysis of poverty and what poverty is and so forth. One of my real qualms with the Million Man March, the first one as well as this one, is that the problems that blacks face, poor blacks specifically, are problems that really can only be addressed by individual responsibility. When you get up on Wednesday morning and help your son with his algebra homework, there's no mass movement to help you do that. That's something that you do out of an individual commitment to excellence, to moving ahead. And I see that as, again, this confusing the issue for poor people, giving them this sort of idea that if we join this collective, if we just be more unified and so forth, that we're going to somehow overcome poverty. I don't think there's any evidence of that.
Dr. Walters, do you think that this movement is somehow overlooking the power of individual action?
No, I don't. Individual action has never been excluded in the black community, particularly in the mainstream black community, because that's the way it is predominantly grown. But having said that, I think that one stands history on its head if we don't appreciate the power of a collective movement. When you go back to the Roosevelt era, it was collective power that advised President Roosevelt that the black community needed certain social policies, and he responded. And that's one of the reasons why blacks quit voting, really, for Republicans who were not responsive to them and started voting for Democrats. The same thing with the 1960s. When you look at the power of that movement and the impact that it had on John Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, and they responded with mass-oriented social policies to a community that was predominantly poor, that response was responsible for launching the African-American middle class.
Well, I would agree. I certainly don't condemn collective action. Absolutely. The civil rights movement is, I think, a stunning example of how successful. When the problem of the group is facing is racial oppression, unfairness, segregation, and you're trying to overturn that negative force, collective action is the only option you have. However, today, 40-some years later, we have those victories. We have civil rights legislation. We've had billions and billions of dollars of social programs. We've had the Great Society. We have all of those things are all the things that you can get through collective action have already been gotten.
Dr. Walters?
We still face very substantial racism in American society. We face areas where black people in particular are charged more for loans and automobiles and homes. Even the black middle class has had problems. We have now a problem of the stagnation of the black middle class. The data tells us that in comparative terms, they have not succeeded in drawing closer to the white middle class. Some of that, of course, is the economic problem that America is going through. But a lot of it is still the fact that there is a glass ceiling on black aspirations. And not to admit that means that you really can't deal with these problems simply by the microcosm of the family.
I'd like to talk a little bit now about education. One of the points in the Millions More platform reads, "We demand an end to substandard education in our community." I'm curious, Dr. Walters, who are you talking to?
Talking to public policy. We have a No Child Left Behind public policy that's been in place for the last several years. It's been unfunded. We have a standard for funding education in most communities that's based upon the property tax. When you base educational funding, which is largely a local responsibility on that, it means that you have built in an inequality in the basis of the way in which schools are funded, which means that poor schools, predominantly black and brown, don't get the same kind of equipment, the same quality of teachers that white children get.
Dr. Steele, do African Americans need a new educational framework?
African Americans need what every other group in society needs by way of education. They need certainly a solid grounding in the basics. But again, the only group that is passive in that paradigm are blacks themselves. And one of the reasons that blacks have such poor educational facilities available to them is because we ourselves tolerate that. We do have public schools. Our children go there every day. There are teachers who are paid good money to work in those schools and teach them, and they don't do it. And most of those schools are run by blacks themselves now in most major inner cities in America. So we keep, you know, almost obsessively looking for excuses. We fail more and we look for more excuses. We fail more and we look for more excuses outside ourselves.
Dr. Steele, Hurricane Katrina has been held up as a rallying point for this movement. Do you agree that now, after the hurricane and all that we saw in its aftermath, is the moment for African Americans to mobilize?
If you are poor, you should be striving to overcome it, period. And you don't need Katrina or some fiction about Katrina to motivate you to do that. If you depend on those kinds of silly things to motivate you, you're going to be mired in poverty forever, waiting for the next mass movement impulse to come along before you can be inspired again.
Katrina kicked open a very historical door, which showed something of the detritus of social policy for the last two decades, run essentially by conservatives. It showed us, for example, that poverty is not gone in America, and we're not just talking about black poverty. We have now nearly 40 million people who are officially classified as poor, and blacks are just a disproportionate group in that number. So, as far as I'm concerned, we have a right to say that Katrina really is a national problem. When you look at any of these cities, what you see is an immobile black population that has really been there, many of them, since slavery, and have not really had the opportunity to do the kind of things that many of the conservatives think they ought to do.
Ronald Walters is a professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland, and Shelby Steele is a senior research fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.